It's Tuesday, the 31st of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Nate Robinson. I'll get back to you with that in just one second. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to interact with the show live as we're going to air, please follow me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. You can tweet at me there as the show is going to air, and you can watch that live on YouTube. And I've found the name of the person who is presenting today's show, and it is ChiliMac3. So ChiliMac3, I apologize for the delay, but you are today's episode sponsor. And if you want to be like ChiliMac3, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become the sponsor of today's show. I mentioned that you can interact with the show live if you're watching on YouTube as it's going to air, and you can do that with all of the shows. So welcome if you are watching live or watching at a later date or listening at a later date. It's always great to have you here on the Red Rock Basketball Monster Show. We're going to be covering the Washington Wizards season in review. But before we get to that, a big congratulations to the, I almost called them the Ultimate Warriors, the Golden State Warriors, for getting the victory in Game 7. A huge, huge performance to get back there and get into the NBA Finals against the Cleveland Cavaliers. I've tweeted this out today. I don't want to hear any talk of choking. I hate this talk. It just really pisses me off. And I have some negative tendencies, definitely. You hear me talk about coaches and players that I don't like to a degree. But I hate this choking talk. It's a load of shit. It's like the Thunder just could do whatever they wanted to, and they decided to lose. Like, yes, but pressure is immense. Pressure is absolutely monstrous in these games, and it makes players do things. We saw Steph have some not ideal moments throughout the series. Pressure gets to players. The Warriors were just absolutely fantastic. And let's just marvel at the type of series that we actually had. We had a series that went to seven games with some surprising blowouts, some massive comebacks, a 3-1 series lead to the underdog who then lost it. Big leads in games, mown down, huge performances, breakouts from Steve Adams, you know, massive performances from Klay Thompson, Durant, Westbrook, Curry, all putting up big numbers, suspension issues with Draymond Green, all this sort of stuff. I don't want to hear conspiracy talk. I don't want to hear, I'm going to hear it, but I can't avoid it. It's not what I want to hear. I don't want to hear choking talk. Let's just say, shit, that was really, really fun. It was awesome. That was seven games of brilliance. The better team, and you know what? The Thunder didn't choke. They're playing the best team ever. Cool. They had to win three games in a row. You know how many times they did that through the season? I don't, but I know it's a lot of times. And yes, it's a high-pressure environment, but the Warriors deserve everything. They get 100% of the credit. The Thunder do not get the blame for that. Yes, I know as a Thunder fan, you must be disappointed. And people who don't like the Warriors for whatever reason, I don't understand hatred of teams at all. It's really strange to me. Teams that are cocky, who cares? Everyone in sports is cocky. These guys are all amazingly, you know, cocky players. They are arrogant. They, of course they are, because they're in the top 0.001% of athletes at their sport. They can afford to be arrogant and cocky, and they've been that way their entire life. I don't care. I don't hate teams. I don't hate any of this sort of stuff. When I have issues about stuff, and you hear me talk about coaches, it's stuff where they make decisions which aren't based under pressure or aren't influenced by other things. And that's where I have concerns about rotation decisions or non-communication and things that... And I have issues with front offices and players and that sort of stuff as well, in unrealistic guidelines and things like that that I've talked about all through the series, but all through the season. But I don't want to hear this choking talk. It's not disgraceful. It's not terrible. They aren't the worst. It is the biggest load of shit. Well, that's not true, because there's massive, massive loads of shit in lots of areas of sport. But the talk of choking, the denigrating of the Thunder season, the denigrating of the Warriors' accomplishments is just not something that I can be bothered dealing with. So if you want to tweet that stuff at me, fine. I'm not gonna respond to it. And I have seen it in a few places. Not directed at me, which is great, because I know the majority of the people listening to this podcast are pretty high in common sense levels. But reading Facebook comments is just dredging into the pits of human stupidity. And if you want to feel better about your own intelligence, go and read Facebook comments on the NBA page, on the team's page, on any of the NBA Facebook groups that are around, you'll feel a lot better about yourself by reading some of the things that people write. You'll also get absolutely infuriated and think, how do these people get out of bed and tie their shoelaces in the morning? They've probably got Velcro shoes. That is the level of intelligence that I see in some of those groups. That is my rant. I haven't had a rant for a while, but just ease up on the negativity, everyone. Let's just look back. You know what? You know why we watch the NBA? Because we bloody like it. It's straightforward. And if you don't like it and you want to complain about things and, oh, it's rigged and this is shit and these teams are terrible, and why do you watch it? Watch something else. Embrace the positivity. Embrace the brilliance that you see. Stop looking for a downside of everything. And again, this is going out to probably nobody who's listening to this, but maybe you appreciate my point of view. Anyway, we're going on to the Washington Wizards now. Michael Bolton's, he's waiting in the wings here. He needs to get his words in. So
let's get to it.
Sorry for the delay, Mick. The Washington Wizards. Now, they were a disappointing team. There's no doubt about that. They had a great playoff run last season. They potentially could have got themselves into the conference finals if not for a John Wall injury. And they were criticized all of last season for their style of play. In the playoffs, completely flipped the switch, played in a different manner. We saw Paul Pierce at the four. We saw more pace and space. And it worked. And Randy Whitman decided to go. He was going to go with that. I don't know if it was his decision or if the front office was pushing him to do it. Let's take ourselves to the next level. Let's start running pace and space. But the problem is the roster didn't suit what he was trying to do. Yes, John Wall's very fast player, but Otto Porter's not that sort of guy. Nene is not that sort of guy. They tried to turn Chris Humphries into a stretch four. Yeah, Jared Dudley can play the four at times, but he was injured for a lot of the season. Allen Anderson was out. You didn't have the players to turn into that. And they did push the pace extraordinarily well. They moved from 18th in pace last season to 5th this year. But playing faster doesn't equal wins. It doesn't equal turning everything around. You've got to be able to do it within the confines of your team, with the structure of your roster. And it didn't work that way. And Randy Whitman got fired. He probably should have been fired a few years ago. I think their playoff run last year saved him. But he is not a great coach. And they bring in Scotty Brooks. Now, Scotty Brooks, also not a great coach. Maybe not the best option for them, but it's not a terrible one. They did pay a lot of money for him, so it's going to be interesting to see how they go. He had success with Oklahoma City, but he also had Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant there, and Serge Ibaka and James Harden at times. So how hard to judge how he's going to play. Will he run just a ridiculous ISO-heavy offense, or is that Westbrook and Durant induced? We've seen what Billy Donovan did this season, and it seems to be not necessarily a Brooks invention, but maybe this is the way that Durant wants to play, and this is the way that Westbrook wants to play, and the Brooks will have his own ideas and be able to bring some different things to this team. That remains to be seen. I do like his ability to work with Brad Beal, with Kelly Oubre, with Otto Porter, to develop some younger players, and John Wall's not an old player either. I like Brooks's ability there, and I think they should play a better style of basketball, and I'm looking for them to be a bit of a bounce back candidate next year. Probably not threatening conference finals, but definitely a team who should be finding themselves in the playoffs. Now, they ended this season with a 41-41 record, and in the upcoming NBA draft, they have exactly zero picks to look forward to. So one of at least two teams that I've covered so far that don't have any picks, the other one being the New York Knicks. They traded their first round pick this year to the Phoenix Suns in exchange for Markieff Morris. Let's look at their free agency situation, and they have got quite a flexible situation heading into next season in terms of their unrestricted free agents. A lot of the players who played key sort of roles for them this year are unrestricted. Nene, who was on the last year of a $13 million deal. They've got Jared Dudley, Allen Anderson, and all these guys are 30-plus. Ramon Sessions, another one, Garrett Temple. And Garrett Temple's 30 years old, everyone, if you want to wear that, 30. J.J. Hickson is an unrestricted free agent, and Marcus Thornton is an unrestricted free agent. And of course, the big name who is entering free agency is Brad Beal, who's a restricted free agent. Whether they retain all of those guys remains to be seen. Allen Anderson barely played due to his ankle injury. Dudley had that back problem and was quite good for them, but whether he comes back to Washington or not remains to be seen. He was traded there, so it wasn't a destination that he chose. He might not return. Sessions had some decent numbers as a backup point guard. They aren't going to need an upgraded backup point guard regardless. Garrett Temple was a guy that I'm not a massive fan of, if you've heard the show. But he did improve a lot over the course of the season and really work himself into being a decent NBA role player. Nothing too spectacular, and I still think that he was overplayed a lot of the time and really shouldn't have been getting anywhere near the minutes that he was. But it depends how other teams look at him. If other teams are looking at Garrett Temple and saying, "Oh, we've got to give this guy $6-7 million a year," then I'll be saying, "Fine, you can give him $6 or $7 million. I'll be pretty happy not paying Garrett Temple $6 or $7 million a year. I just don't think he's that sort of player." JJ Hickson's terrible. Marcus Thornton had a very, very weird season. Whether he returns remains to be seen. But that is, I'll count them up, 4, 6, 7 unrestricted free agents and one restricted. It's probably easier to talk about who they've got under contract. Johnny Wall, Marcin Gortat, Markieff Morris, Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre. They're the only players under contract. You've got Jarrell Eddie with a non-guaranteed deal, and you've got Drew Gooden with a non-guaranteed deal. So you have got tons of flexibility. A lot of teams have cap space. Definitely the Wizards have got a lot of cap space, and they've obviously been priming themselves for Kevin Durant heading into free agency, who, by the way, I don't think goes anywhere. So they've been clearing out in these contracts to give themselves space for Durant. But if they don't get Durant, they've got room to offer other players. Who that is remains to be seen, but they're going to have a definite need for a backup big. They're going to have a definite need for a backup point guard. They're two striking needs that this team's got. They need backup two guards. They need probably at wing that they're set, but they need backup fours, backup fives, backup ones, backup twos. And there's a lot out there. Not a great free agency class if they miss out on Durant, but they might. I don't think Horford's a guy that they'd be looking at. Fournier, probably not. Don't think he really fits what they need to do. They need to be going after some other more under-the-radar targets. Again, it's tough to say. I'm not really doing this as a free agency preview podcast, but they've got a lot of flexibility heading into next season. Let's start looking at what they did last season and looking at their value and their fantasy numbers. Johnny Wall, of course, the best player on this team. He was a guy that I was super keen on at the end of the first round in drafts. I picked him at pick 9 in one myself. To me, he was a guy that you go get in that 8 to 12 range. And in 8 cat leagues, he finished the season ranked 11th, exactly the same as the season before. In 9 cat leagues, he's a lot worse because of his turnovers. But you know my thoughts on turnovers. I don't care that a player turns him over. And John Wall finishing the season ranked 22nd. There is no way you would pick him at pick 22nd. Or pick 22 for me. That was an improvement on the year before when he was 27th. But I don't care about turnovers. In terms of in a punting situation, a 9-2 or an 8-2, he ranked 12th in both those formats. So that's sort of where he sits at that end of the first round. And again, he's a very young player. He's not old whatsoever. He's sort of, I don't think he's hit his peak yet. He's at 25 years of age. And this season, what he did, I think he was extraordinarily underrated. He was a guy that was getting bagged mercilessly, whatever, you know what I mean, without mercy at the start of the season for some of his performances. But he turned it up, and it was a stretch for over a couple of months in the December-January phase where he was like the second or third ranked fantasy player. He ended up averaging just a tick under 20 points a game at 19.9. He hit 1.5 threes, which is almost double what he did last year, 4.9 rebounds, 10.3 assists, 1.9 steals, 0.8 blocks at 42-79 is his percentages. And the most important thing here to me is he's increased his scoring, he increased his three-pointers, he increased his rebounds, he increased his assists, he increased his steals, he increased his blocks, he increased his free throw percentage, and he took his three-pointers up from 30 to 35. The only thing he had a fall in was field goal percentage, where he dropped from 45 down to 42. So improvements right across the board from John Wall, and I think you can see some incremental improvements again next season. He has definitely got 20 and 10 upside. I'm a massive, massive John Wall fan in terms of fantasy especially. But if you look at in terms of advanced stats, he didn't lead this team in win shares. He finished 7th in win shares per 48. He was the clear box score plus minus leader on the team, the clear VORP leader, and posted the best PER, but wasn't a dominant performance across the board in all categories, but a stellar 46.2 assist percentage compared to a 17.5 turnover percentage is tremendous to me. We talked about his turnovers before. They were huge. They were at 4.1 per game, but I'm not a guy that hangs myself up on a player's turnovers and doesn't make me go, I'm not drafting John Wall at the end of the first round because he's getting 4 turnovers per game. That is not something that concerns me. I think that John Wall, he just remains in that group of 8 to 12, maybe 8 to 15 with the elevation of, say, Karl Anthony Towns this season, and Draymond Green maybe pushing into that group. He's probably already there anyway. I think that you pick him around the turn, and you can't get 10 assists from anyone, really. You can get it from Chris Paul, maybe, but even then, he's on the way down. Johnny Wall's going to give you 20 and 10. He's going to hit over a three a game, it appears now. He's going to get you close to 2 steals. He's going to be a super aggressive shot blocker as a point guard. And a 5 rebound per game guy. you can't go wrong to me picking that at the end of the first round. That is a really solid pick. Marcin Gortat was the second-ranked player on this team. He finished the season ranked 36th in 9-cat and 50th in 8-cat leagues. He was underused to me by Whitman, extraordinarily so. I can't understand the way that, especially when there's literally no better backup center. You're not bringing in a young stud who's looking for minutes and hungry and providing energy. You're putting in players like Drew Gooden, Nene, who's at 33 years old. Yes, he's still good, but surely Marcin Gortat can play more than... And Gortat only played 30 minutes a game, and at the second half of the season, he really, really dropped down what he was doing. In terms of his playing time, it didn't make sense. He'd play 15 minutes, or not 15, he played 25 minutes, 25 minutes, then he played 32, but he needed to be out there more. He averaged 13.5 points a game, he had 9.9 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 0.6 steals, 1.3 blocks, 57% from the field, 71% from the free throw line. So some pretty decent numbers there from Gortat. Now, he is an older player. He's not young, he's 32, but to me, he's not showing the sort of signs of slowing down we see with some of these older guys. He actually scored more points this season than any time in the last 4 years, more rebounds than any time in the last 4 years. He blocked the same amount of shots as last year. He shot exactly the same field goal percentage. His free throw percentage was exactly the same. Basically zero decline in anything that Marcin Gortat did. And if Scott Brooks plays him 32 minutes a game, we're going to see a bit of an increase. And to me, he's one of those... Elite's probably the wrong word, but one of those guys that you get as an underrated fantasy target in rounds 5 or 6 when he can easily give you top 50 value. If you pick him in the 60s or 70s, I think you're getting tremendous numbers, and I don't envisage a fall off next season. After that, we might be struggling a little bit. But if Scotty Brooks can give him an extra minute, an extra 2 minutes, I think it would be tremendous, and he could approach a 1.7 block, 10 rebound, 14 point sort of targets, and I reckon they'd be pretty. You'd be pretty impressed if you got those numbers from him. He was the player that led this team in win shares. He was also first in win shares per 48. So he did it in win shares, but he did it also in terms of an efficiency standpoint as well. He was third on the team in box score plus minus, and I think we look at defensive box score plus minus. He was second, just a shade behind Nene, and offensively he wasn't a negative either. So big season for Marcin Gortat, and a guy who I think is underappreciated. Otto Porter, I thought he was due for a breakout. This was his opportunity with Paul Pierce leaving, and he took it. But did he take it fully? I don't know. His numbers never looked like they were translating fantastically to fantasy. And yes, he was ranked 60th in 9-cat leagues, 78th in 8-cat leagues, and that's pretty good. But he did drop off. He was 79th post-All-Star, 100th post-All-Star in 8-cat leagues. And if you look in a punting situation, he was 122nd in 8-cat punt in the 8-2 ranks. It's not great. And there was a massive stretch where he was unownable, I think, through January and February because he was doing nothing. Now, he did come on strong at the end of the season, but over the course of the year, he averaged 30 minutes, 11.6 points, 1.3 threes, 5 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 1.4 steals, half a block, 47 and 75. All these numbers just feel really average. Yes, the steals are really nice from him, but everything else just feels... I'm getting nothing positive out of Porter, but nothing as a real negative. Just exactly, you look at Otto Porter's numbers, aside from maybe his scoring and his assist numbers are low. It's like, this is what I want my fantasy team to average. And he's just giving you, and that's really valuable. But does he have upside to improve? I still think he does. He's missed big chunks of his first couple of seasons. Was relatively healthy. He wasn't a model of health. He played 75 games though and 30 minutes, and that's his first real look at extended action in the NBA. Last year he played 19 minutes in 74 games and just 37 games the year before that. He obviously put up career highs in basically every statistic, and probably the most important thing when a guy has such a big jump in his minutes is to see how his percentages looked, and they both improved, or they all improved. His field goals, his free throws, his three-point percentage improved, and he also improved his per 36s in points, threes, in rebounds, in assists, in steals. So all those rate-based things, they all worked out in his favor as well. So I think that's a good sign for Otto Porter. I still have faith in him that he can become a pretty decent NBA player. No, probably not a star, but third on this team he was in win shares. His win shares per 48 were third as well. I thought he put up nice box score plus minus numbers of 1.8. So just, you're promising, but not spectacularly promising. If he ranked 78th, can he get much better than that? I think he can push the top 55, top 60 over the next couple of seasons. mainly by being able to hit a 1.6 threes, 1.8 steals, and get your 5 rebounds, get up to 2 assists, score 13 or 14 points. The points is probably going to be where it's hardest for him because he does struggle a little bit on offense, but his offensive advanced numbers are pretty good, so he's still helping in those areas, but it can serve to get better. He put up a really good true shooting percentage of 56, and that's, you know, above average. So I think that signs are looking good for him. He's only 22 years old as well, so he's still got some upside in him. So in a dynasty league, if someone was turned off by the way he finished the season, I'm okay with getting him. I just don't ever think that he's ever going to be a top 30 player or even a top 40 guy, but he can probably improve one or two rounds on what we saw this season and just be a very solid, you know, really solid rotisserie guy as well, given he's not going to hurt you in any areas, and just provide that solid base throughout those mid rounds, and you'd be pretty comfortable in getting those sort of numbers off him. Brad Beal. I'm not a huge fan of Brad Beal. He does get a lot of excitement about him, and he was a guy that I thought was primed to have a breakout season. I didn't draft him anywhere because when I look at a guy and think he's going to be a breakout player, I still want to get them at value, but he was a guy that exceeded value in terms of where he's being drafted. And what he did was have a real disappointing campaign. The concerns over his injury are absolutely real to me. When you talk about injury-prone players, and I dislike the term injury-prone players because it gets thrown around, like Anthony Davis. He hurt his head, his eye, his back, his arm, his toes, his asshole, everything. Whatever it was something happening. Fine. It's a terrible run of luck. Maybe it's stylistically how he plays, whatever it is. Brad Beal's had the same injury 3 times in a row, and it's a long-term concerning injury. Stress reactions in your leg when you've got a dickhead coach who's playing you, Brad's all right, he hasn't had a stress reaction in 2 weeks, let's play him 40 minutes a night. Randy Whitman didn't listen to the medical staff, or the medical staff has no idea what they're doing. Either one of those two things. Regardless, Whitman's gone. Not sure about the medical staff. I think they're still there. But Beal is going to be under minutes restrictions, I think, for the rest of this, for next season. And whether that means will the team that signs him, whether it's the Wizards or not, will they have to temper his minutes? I think that they probably will. And that tempers his fantasy upside. Now, I said he was the 94th ranked player in 9 cat leagues this year, 79th in 8 cat, and had a big dip post All-Star, and just suffered just ridiculous injuries, pelvis injuries as well, which kept him out for games at a time. He only played 55 games, hasn't played 75 games yet in his career. Averaged 31 minutes a game, which is a drop of 2 minutes. And again, before the injury, he was playing a stack more than that. He averaged 17.4 points, a career high. 1.9 threes, equal career high. But he dropped in the other stats. So only 3.4 rebounds, career low. 2.9 assists, worst season since his rookie year. 1 steal, worse than last year. Blocks dropped as well at just 0.2. He did hit 45% of his field goal attempts, which is a huge, huge jump, and he started off the season red hot from the field. So that's a 2% jump, which is pretty significant, that's it, when you're taking 14 attempts per game. He also went 77% from the line, so he's not an elite free throw shooter. He's an average one, and he actually dropped below 40% from three for the first time in 2 years, hitting 39%. Can't complain there when he's 4 seasons in the NBA, he's shot 39, 40, 41, and 39. These are all really good shooting numbers from Brad Beal, but the injury is the concern. If you're looking to buy low on him in a dynasty league, there's never been a better time because of the injury concern, but I think the injury concern is enough to me where I go, he's got top 30 upside, absolutely. But he's going to actually have to stay healthy, and I'm really concerned that might take 2 years. And when he does that, he can't ever reach his full athletic peak because of it. He can be a guy, and we've seen it, that can average 20 points, can average 4.5 assists, 4 rebounds, a steal, hit 2.2 threes a game, and at 45 and 78. And 40% from three, which are tremendous numbers. And if you're in a league that counts 3-point percentage, he's got a tremendous extra bump there as well. Buy low on him in Dynasty. Don't sell too low if you own him, but do be cautious, and be cautious of what you're giving up, because I do have real concerns about Beal and this injury, because again, 3 seasons is not a fluke. It is not something that is random. It is the same injury that's continually happening, and it's a bother. In terms of his advanced numbers, they were terrible. He finished 11th on this team in win shares per 48. And that's not good for a guy that should be, you know, right at the top. His box score plus minus was 6th, but it was a negative 0.6. And that's because his defense was not ideal. Negative 1.6 box score plus minus. He posted just a 15.5 PER. Really not great numbers from Brad Beal this year, despite his box score looking pretty decent. Now, is he a max player? I think we had some questions about this at the end. Is he a max player? He is going to be a max player. And the term max player is another term that's really starting to shit me, because it's all market dependent. It's all time dependent. Was Chandler Parsons a max player when he signed a max deal? No, but someone had the money and signed it to him, and good luck. And now that contract, if he's not going to opt out, which he will opt out, it looks like a pretty bargain price at 15 or 16 million for Chandler Parsons. Same with Gordon Hayward. In the end, like, he signs a deal for 20 million or whatever it is. Next season, the cap jumps by another 20 million, and you might go, well, I've got Brad Beal on $21 million. It's not bad, because he's stayed healthy and he turned in a 20-point per game season. I'm not really worried about the terminology max contract. Doesn't bother me as well. He's going to get paid. He deserves to get paid. Is he a better player than Kent Bazemore? 100 times better than Kent Bazemore. The injury history does worry you, and you want your doctors to check over everything that he does and all his medical records and all that sort of stuff, and whether you can find anything remains to be seen. But I'd be concerned. But yes, a team is going to take that chance, and it is with 30 teams. It takes one team that wants to pay him $20 million, and it's going to happen. And good luck to him. And you hear people, again, people searching out the negativities. Oh, if Bradley Beal's a max player, look, good on you. He is. He makes his $20 million. Fine. And I really think that he could be a player that we see drop down standard league draft boards heading into next season, who can turn in a top 50, a top 45 type season if he stays healthy. And under Scott Brooks and Scott Brooks' development abilities, I really think that Brad Beal can, and this is big coming from me because I've never been a big Brad Beal fan, but this is the time to strike when his value is super low. I think that it's going to be a big season for Brad Beal next season. Hope I don't live to regret those words. Markieff Morris. If you don't think Markieff Morris is a good basketball player, I don't think you watch enough basketball. Yes, he was really bad this year. He was the 187th ranked player over the course of the year, 139th in ACAT leagues. But post-All-Star break, after his trade, he got himself 109th in ACAT leagues. It's a big jump. 116th in NICAT, big jump. He was bad in Phoenix because he didn't want to be there. And yes, that's a personality issue. That's, as we would say here, that's, you know, in Australia, he's a shit bloke. Fine. Gets in trouble with the law, fights with the front office, argues, and I can see some of his side of his arguments. The twin brother thing is a little bit weird, but they're not playing with each other now, and they haven't said they have to play with each other, and they have made that, they just didn't like the way that when they were playing together, that the way that they weren't even spoken to about trades. That was the concern that they had, and they're fine with not playing with each other. They're not trying to get traded to the same team again now. And I think that Markieff Morris is a very underrated player for what he can do. And I think he's going to really fit what the Wizards need to do. Their power forward position was a mess. He came over. It took him a while to get acclimated. He started having a few good games towards the end of the season. And I'm really interested to see what he's going to do with a full season. Now, over the course of the year, he played just 26 minutes a game, 12 points, 5.5 rebounds, 0.9 steals, 0.5 blocks. And nothing there where you look at it and go, That's great. That's fantastic. I love Markieff Morris. Can I buy myself a Markieff Morris Wizards jersey? I don't think you'd be looking at those numbers and saying, yeah, that's exactly what we're looking for. But if you compare what he did between Washington and Phoenix, he scored at a better rate. He grabbed more rebounds. He blocked more shots. He got the same amount of steals. But he shot an effective field goal percentage of 51% as opposed to 42. His field goal percentage went from 47 to 40. His three-point percentage went from 29 to 32. So he was more locked in. He was getting better shots. And I'm pretty sure that he's going to be able to have himself a better season in Washington next season. People are going to be very hesitant to draft Markieff Morris. Absolutely. Once, if I'm in the 80s, or maybe not 80s, if I'm in the 90s, I'm okay with getting him, because I think that he can provide that 75 to 80 type ranking numbers. His last season in Phoenix, he was the 70th ranked player in ACAT leagues, averaging 15, 6, and 2.5 with 0.7 threes, 1.2 steals, and 0.5 blocks on 47 and 76. That should be what he's aiming for, and there's no reason to me why Markieff can't do that. In terms of when he came over to Washington, his advanced numbers, they were okay-ish. His box score plus minus wasn't. It was a negative 1.5. His win shares, he still finished 10th on the team despite playing just 27 games for them. His win shares per 48, not so great at 0.66, but I think there's a lot of factors to do with Morris's play this season, and I think he's going to be... I don't think you're going to have to take him anywhere near the top 100 in drafts, and I think that he has a real, real chance of finishing inside there. He's not old. He's not an old player by any stretch. If I check out his age, he's currently 26. He's on an absolute bargain of a contract at $8 million on average over the next 3 years. That is just ridiculously cheap. He is one of the best value contracts in the league. He can return to being a guy that should be playing 30 to 31 minutes a night for this team. Again, they don't have any good backup big men at all with Nene going. And he should find himself in those minutes. I think a big bounce back season is on the cards for Markieff Morris. Just another one that I'll probably have to eat my words on. Jared Dudley. Yeah, super performance from him to come out from that back issue. He ended up the season as 143rd and 155th in 9 and 8 cat leagues, but started off the season 91st in 9 cat pre-All-Star, dropped off significantly down to 222nd once Markieff Morris arrived. But he is almost the perfect teammate, Jared Dudley. You would have heard him on plenty of podcasts. Just sounds like a great bloke to talk to, a great bloke to have in a locker room. He gives it to you straight. Really helpful, great teacher. He understands his role. My role is a bench player who starts at times, and a lot of my value is as a mentor. You want me to go out there and shoot threes? I never did it, but I'll learn to do it, and that's what he did across the course of his NBA career. He's a hustler, he's a defender, he gets steals, he gets rebounds. I'm a huge fan of what Jared Dudley can do. Now, he only averaged 7.9 points in his 26 minutes this year, but 1.2 threes, 3.5 rebounds, 0.9 steals, and he's always been a really good shooter, 48% from the field and 74% from the line, and hit 42% of his threes. He's going to find himself with a key role, whether it's back on this team or not, but it's going to be only for those deeper leagues that play to, say, 16 or 18 teams. His age, he is 30, so you're going to see a drop in minutes over the next season or two for him and production as well. So don't expect too much if you're looking in dynasty leagues, but he's a nice short-term deep league filler for about the next one or two seasons. But he's a really key part of a team in terms of what he brings to a locker room and all that sort of stuff. In terms of win shares, he was actually fourth on this team in win shares at 4.6, right up there in the win shares per 48 as well. You put together the fourth best box score plus minus on this team. So much of what he can do can't be measured, but then you get to these advanced numbers and they do sort of measure what he's able to do. Spacing, defense, stretching, shooting, all that sort of stuff that he's able to do really sort of comes through when looking at these numbers. And really, I'm gushing too much about Jared Dudley, but he was superb. Nene, I wish we could see healthy Nene because he is really good still, but there is no way we're ever seeing a healthy Nene ever again, it feels like. He was the 201st ranked player this year in 9-cat, 188th in 8-cat leagues. And you just feel like that's going to be his destiny and he might be able to find a spot in the 20-team league. And you'll have times where in a, oh, not 20, maybe you go to a 16-team league, but when you go into a spot in a 14-team league, hey, he's a short-term ad at times, but at other times he's not. Now, he averaged 9.2 points, 4.5 rebounds in his 19 minutes. He only played 57 games. 0.9 steals, 0.5 blocks, 54 and 58 as his percentage. So not a great free throw shooter, obviously, Nene. But he can get out there and he can turn it on. But he can't turn it on anywhere near often enough for us to get anything more than marginally interested. He did finish fifth on his team in box score plus minus, which had only 57 games and in a limited role, and being as old as he is pretty impressive. Sixth on the team in terms of his win shares as well. He was second in win shares per 48 and he led the team in defensive box score plus minus. But at age of 33, you're definitely not playing Nene $13 million. But to him to come back on a cheaper deal for 1 or 2 years, I think it's absolutely fine. In that role is a 20-minute guy, maybe is your fourth big. But the problem is that Washington was relying on him as basically their second big. But you're going to have Morris and Gortat ahead of him. You want to get another big in there and play him as the fourth big, as the backup center to Gortat, to play hopefully only 16 minutes because Gortat plays 32. And I think Nene can really handle that role. He can be an offensive load. He's a massive, massive man, a strong defender. Fantasy-wise, it comes in bursts. And when it bursts and then when the burst drops off, that's it. You just cut bait because it's not going to happen again. But he'll come in and have some really strong performances and then they fade away. Marcus Thornton. What a weird, weird season it was from Marcus Thornton. He started off the season in Houston, did not play at all. And then the Rockets decided to bench Terrence Jones got injured with one of his bizarre injuries. And they decided, Jones is out, let's start Thornton instead. And let's go small and play Trevor Ariza at the four. And Thornton was a must-own player, just red hot to start the season. And then he became nothing, a nobody. He ended up getting traded to the Pistons in the failed Donatas Motiejunas deal, came back to Houston when that deal was reversed, he got released, he signed in Washington, and he has these games where you look at Marcus Thornton and go, geez, that was pretty impressive. And then he goes back to being Marcus Thornton. Said he finished around that 205 mark in 9 cat, 223rd in 8 cat leagues. Not much to be all that excited about. He averaged 1.5 threes on 34% shooting. So he hits threes. He just takes a lot of shots to get there. Less than 40% from the field, 85% from the field from the line, 0.8 steals, 2.5 rebounds. Yeah, decent numbers. But have we really... Where does Marcus Thornton end up next season? That's the thing. As I mentioned, he is an unrestricted free agent. You would think he signs on somewhere, but he's not going to sign on somewhere, I think, where he plays the sort of minutes that he played this season. But there is always going to be this one stretch where a team's going to go, ooh, Marcus Thornton, we've got injuries, let's start him. He'll play 30 minutes, he'll score 20 points and hit 6 threes and grab 8 rebounds, and you'll go, what the hell is going on? And then he'll go back to complete obscurity. I don't think that anything that we saw from him early on this season is worth investing in. He's 28 years old. We know who Marcus Thornton is at this point. He might not even find himself in the NBA, although I'd be shocked if he didn't. I wouldn't mind seeing him somewhere like Charlotte, actually. But he's just not reliable enough for fantasy, and he's not someone I'd be placing any sort of priority on. Ramon Sessions, another one of these unrestricted free agents. He ranked 254th this season, 224th in 8 cat leagues. But as soon as John Wall had to miss and they were going to start Ramon Sessions, you knew you were going to get big minutes out of, well, big numbers out of Sessions. He averaged almost 10 points a game, half a three, 3 assists, 0.6 steals on 47 and 76%. So tremendous percentages from Sessions. At 30 years old, he is still a valuable backup in the league. He's probably got one or two more years as a primary backup point guard left in him with a guy who can pinch hit, but he's not obviously the backup of the future, but that doesn't matter. He can go to any team now and be a backup and be a solid guy for your 18 team leagues and someone to snatch up in DFS or in other sort of seasonal formats when the starter does go down. He's going to be always a great source of assists, an efficient guy, doesn't hit a huge amount of threes and doesn't score at a huge rate, but I think that he's still pretty much a solid option on this team. He was quite good in terms of the advanced numbers. His box score plus minus, he finished 10th in that stat. He was 5th in win shares. He was actually 5th in win shares per 48 as well. So it wasn't just due to the fact that he did play all 82 games. And one of the guys ahead of him was JJ Hickson, who only played 15 games and only 131 minutes for the season. So hard to really judge too much on or include Hickson in those rankings. So when you look at it, Sessions is probably the fourth best player on this team in terms of win share contributions. His defense is a concern, though, so that means he's not going to be able to get extended minutes in really any situation apart from an emergency injury spot. But moving on from him as a 30-year-old, they might bring him back. He did seem to fit pretty well with this roster, so I'd have no problem with him coming back. And then he just remains that guy that in those deeper leagues, despite some of his other failings, a guy that gets you 3 assists in 20 minutes a game is really valuable if your league's going 200, 250 players deep, because it's really going to be hard to find yourself any assists. And a guy like Sessions who can rack them up in a limited role, he does hold value. Garrett Temple, a guy I touched on earlier, he would start when Bradley Beal went down. I would never understand why he would. Nothing about his game screams anything exciting to me. He was the 213th ranked player this year in 9 cat leagues, 233rd in 8 cat leagues, and played a pretty decent chunk of minutes, 24.5 minutes a game in 80 games, averaged 7.3 points, 1.1 threes, 2.7 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 0.9 steals, less than 40% from the field, 73% from the line, and less than 35% from the three-point line. None of these numbers are good. They're not interesting. They're not exciting. He posted a putrid PER of 9.3. He was 14th on the team in win shares per 48. His box score plus minus, it was okay, actually. It was 8th, still a negative 0.1. Negative 1 And he's offensively, he wasn't great. He does provide pretty good defense, and I'll give him that. He's a positive on the defensive end in both win shares and box score plus minus, and he did provide that. But with Bradley Beal out, the team needed more offensive punch, and Temple just wasn't providing it in the minutes that he was getting. And he was a Randy Whitman favorite. Not sure he's going to be a Scotty Brooks favorite. Maybe he can be Scotty Brooks' Thabo Sefolosha. That's a possibility, because he is a much better defender than what he is as an offensive player, and that might be something that is able to keep him in the league for maybe a couple more seasons. But at age 30, he's way older than what you would expect. Before we move on to the rest of the players, just a quick word from our sponsor today, which is Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and every month you get between 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items and more. We've got our own unique URL, which is lootcrate.com/redrock. And if you go to that unique URL, it tells the guys at Loot Crate you came from listening to this podcast. And you can also get $3 off any new subscription. So enter the code REDROCK by visiting that lootcrate.com/redrock URL. Enter the coupon code, save $3. I'm sure you're all eagerly anticipating the new Loot Box, which will be coming out for the month of June, so we'll have information on that soon. But head across to lootcrate.com, even if it's just to browse, lootcrate.com/redrock, and it really helps support the advertisers that help support this podcast. So thank you to you guys for checking that sort of stuff out. Talked enough Garrett Temple. The next player I want to look at is Alan Anderson, and it's really hard to get any gauge on what Alan Anderson did. His fantasy numbers were non-existent, 338th for the season. He barely played. He dealt with that ankle injury in preseason. He played 13 games at 15 minutes a game, would come back, would have limited minutes, would have to sit back-to-back, so I don't think we can really gauge anything from looking at the numbers that he put up. He shot just 36% from the field. He is going to be, I think, a bargain signing in free agency. Yes, he is 33 years old, but if you can get him at a league minimum, which he got $4 million last year at 33 years old, coming off a season where he was terrible, I think you can get him at a pretty cheap contract. I reckon he could be serviceable for a team who's looking for some three-point shooting, looking for some cheap wing play. I'm definitely not targeting him in Dynasty. He's got no ability to start at this point. He's old, obviously not a youngster by any stretch, but he does have some underrated abilities, and you might find him being someone you grab off a waiver wire in a 16-team league or a 14-team league, depending on where he ends up. But I think he could be an underrated signing for next season. JJ Hixon, one of the worst players in the NBA. He finished 397th in 9-cat leagues, 374th in 8-cat. He'll go out there and start, and if he starts and plays 30 minutes, he's going to go out there and go, oh, look at JJ Hixon, 15 points, 15 rebounds. But he is literally a rebound thief. He is a terrible player. He's a terrible free throw shooter, shot 45% from the field. He's 52 from the field. 45 from the line, 52 from the field. Doesn't really block shots, doesn't get steals, does not pass. Averaged 6 points and 4 rebounds this season. He's just really a horrible player. He's just not good, and he's an unrestricted free agent. He's only 27. I don't imagine that he's going to get any really huge offers. He might not even find himself on a team, and if he does, he'll be fifth big, sixth big sort of player, not anyone that's really overly exciting. Now, I mentioned his advanced numbers in terms of win shares per 48 were pretty good, but his box score plus minus was bad. He was a -3 there. Overall win shares, he didn't put up much because he didn't play much. He only put up 0.3 there. He's just not a great player. And at 27, you think, yeah, he's entering his peak, but he is toast. There is no resurrecting of JJ Hixon at this point. Kelly Oubre, he was a fairly high draft, well, not fairly high, he's picked 15th in the draft. And it's fair to say that it was not a good season for Oubre. He was the 393rd ranked player in both 8 and 9 cat leagues. He didn't really show much improvement in the second half of the season. And if you look at his numbers, they're not all that interesting. He played 63 games, 11 minutes a game, 3.7 points, 0.4 threes, 2 rebounds, 0.2 assists, 0.3 steals, 43% and 63%, and shot 32% from 3. He had a couple of little showings. He disappointed me in person when I saw him in Summer League. He's got Otto Porter ahead of him. Is there any hope for Kelly Oubre? Yeah, I think there is hope. Obviously, it's going to take 2 years, I think, at least 2 more years for Oubre to really start to develop into anything, and you're going to be playing the long game in Dynasty Leagues. But he can make a jump. at 393 ranked this season, I think he can take a jump up to maybe the top 300, and that's still not going to be in the purview of really anybody who's who's playing fantasy in most situations, but he can take a jump, and then I think in his fourth season is probably where you look for him to really start to take a step forward, maybe his third season. But if guys like Thornton leave and guys like Alan Anderson leave, there are going to be minutes on the wing opening up, and I think it's almost a guarantee, instead of seeing 11 minutes a game, we're going to see him at 17 to 20 minutes a game, and I think you'll see his per 36 rates jump up as well. And I think he can still be a decent guy. I think he can get some steals for you. I think he'll score, he'll hit threes, he'll be a really solid rebounder, and he's got scope to improve his percentages. I don't think passing's ever going to be his forte by any stretch, but I think he can be a pretty decent player. I think he can be starter quality in a couple of seasons, but he's obviously not there yet. Now, his advanced numbers were not ideal. He was third worst on the team in win shares per 48. He's third worst in box score plus minus, but it was the offensive part of his game that really suffered. The defense wasn't great at a negative 1.6, but offensive at negative 4.3 is a big drop off, but that will come. His shooting will come. His three-point shooting, his field goal shooting, his free throw shooting, his passing, here, that will all improve. And I think that if you come in with a solid defensive base, which he was decent but not spectacular there, I think he can bring those other things forward. It is going to be... How low is his value at the moment in Dynasty? It should be pretty low. If you can acquire him for your garbage pieces, and you've got bench space, or your league is structured that you can sit on a guy for a couple of years, I think that we head to the 2018 season, that's probably the time when Oubre really starts to develop into a 25-30 minute a game guy and can start to be a player who's a top 90, top 80 fantasy guy. I don't think he's really ever got top 40 potential or top 30 potential, but he could be a guy who maybe kisses the edge of the top 50. That's probably it for him. The last two players, there's really very little to say. Drew Gooden, he was ranked 400th for the season. He had stretches at times over the last couple of years, but it didn't really translate this year. He was a negative win shares guy, which is not ever a good thing. He was really poor offensively. He was okay defensively, but not great. And Jarrell Eddy, who signed a 10-day in the middle of the season and then extended out to the end of the season and said he's on a non-guaranteed deal for next season. He's a 24-year-old wing who put up some okay numbers. He averaged 2.4 points in his 6 minutes, and that's not a bad return, including 0.6 threes, and hit his threes at 32%, so not bad for the first taste of NBA action. But you know, I don't really value Jarrell Eddy as being someone who's going to sort of start blowing the doors off NBA teams and becoming a really reliable player who ever even touches the top 200. I'm going to take a quick break now. We're going to be talking about Wizards stashed players and answering your questions on the other side of this break. I saw your picture today. Got me thinking about the things that I would say. But I know you're happy now in your someplace far away. Away, away, away. And I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your old street, and I wonder if I'll ever meet again. Without a second glance, you turned your back, my friend. This is the most excited I've been for talking about an overseas stash player, and this is my boy. This is my guy that I've been super interested in waiting for him to come to the NBA. He's one of my top European stash players, and he should be coming over this season. Word is that he'll be coming over. It is a former second round pick. He's from the Czech Republic, and his name is Tomas Satoransky. If you're unaware of my boy Tomas, start getting yourself aware. He is a player who's a combo guard. He's more a shooting guard who handles the ball almost like a Bradley Beal, to be honest, and has been playing over in Barcelona for the last couple of seasons. This season, he was decent. He only averaged 9 points a game, 9.5, but that's, you know, in Europe, the numbers are always a bit down. But what he did do is he shot 52% from the field. He shot 39% from three. He averaged 4.2 assists, almost three rebounds. He got a steal a game. He only got 1.6 turnovers per game. So as a shooting guard, he's got an assist to turnover ratio, 4.2 to 1.6. That's a pretty decent turnover ratio. He had tremendous win share numbers, 5.79 offensively, 8 offensively in or eight total in his win shares, which is pretty impressive stuff. He boasted a PER of just under 19, and we all know that PER favors the big men, so 19 as a guard is a pretty impressive number. Nice offensive rating of 122.9 versus his defensive rating of 104.5. Only had a usage of 19, so not a high usage player. Again, he's distributing the ball a lot, a really nice assist percentage, low turnovers, decent steals, solid rebounder. True shooting of 63% is absolutely tremendous as well. We talk about all these guys moving on. Marcus Thornton can go. Jarrell Eddie's non-guaranteed. Alan Anderson may go. Brad Beal may go for all we know. Ramon Sessions can just come over, slot in, and go, I'm going to be the backup two. I'll play a little bit of backup one as well. I'll have 20 minutes in my first season, and I'll be a top 200 fantasy player. I really like what this guy can do. If Beal goes, is the window open for him to become a starter in a couple of years? That's probably pushing it a bit, but he has got tremendous potential. I really, really like Tomas Satoransky. Go and view his clips on YouTube. Go and view what he can do. A combo guard, check his size before I misremember. Yeah, he's a decent size. He's 6'6", weighs 200 pounds. He's a big body and a guy who can shoot and handle the ball. I think the Wizards are calling out exactly for that sort of guy, and he could be Brad Beal without the injuries. I think that's his sort of upside, which is weird to say that he's like the player that's on his team, but that's the real sort of guy that I think that he can become. And hopefully we get to see him in Summer League, but hopefully we get to see him come across. It's been a few years now. I can't wait to see Satoransky finally putting on a jersey when there's going to be some spots opening up in this rotation. So if for some reason no one has grabbed Tomas Satoransky and your league is relatively deep, I'm really interested in seeing what he can do with this team. Now we move on to your questions. Johnny Murphy, I can call you Johnny, can't I? He says, can you give a Kelly Oubre player comp that won't depress dynasty owners? Now, player comps is interesting because I can give you a statistical player comp because I went through every player in the NBA this season and compared this season with every season over the last 30 years. On a per 100 possession basis, I used 16 different variables, including their age. I used field goal attempts, field goal percentage, three-pointers made attempts percentage, two-pointers made attempts percentage, free throws the same, offensive, defensive, rebounding, assists, steals, blocks, turnovers, fouls, points, all those sort of categories, lots of different categories, and compared them all, and did this for every single player. So if you want to know a specific player who my comps come out as, let me know. And the top three players that came out as comps for Kelly Oubre, Bobby Jones. I'm sure you're not too excited about Bobby Jones. He had two seasons in the NBA and they weren't very good. So that makes you think probably, what have we got here? That's not a good comp. The next one was Mitchell Butler, who played 8 seasons in the NBA. He was a 6'5 shooting guard. He never really found himself a key role either. I think the third comp is where you should be able to get some sort of upside or some sort of confidence, and it's Byron Russell. We know Byron Russell was a shooting guard. He played 13 seasons in the NBA, and he was really poor his first 3 years. He finished 255th, 225, 255, 331 his first 3 years in fantasy rankings. Only just got over 15 minutes a game in those. But then after that, the next 5 seasons, he had four seasons inside the top 100, one at 113th. He had 2 top 50 seasons as well in 9 cat rankings. He's a guy that I think, and I'm happy. Look, I don't think he's going to become Byron Russell, but it's not just full with total scrubs. He's player comps. I think that's key to look at. And you go down the list, he's got some other weird comps that came out. Donatas Motiejunas' 2014 season was one of them. That's a weird one. Dougie McDermott's rookie season as well is another one that comes up. So not things that were great, but what you want to look at is, okay, so he comes out compared to Byron Russell's second season, his sophomore campaign. And that wasn't a good season for Russell, but we saw what Russell could develop into. So he does have that upside. So if you own him in Dynasty, as I touched on before, hope's not lost. I think there is a potential for him, but it's going to take time for him to start to develop, for him to mature. And he can become a defensive player. He can become a scorer. He can become a pretty good rebounder. He can become a three-point shooter. He can become all of those things. So if his upside, if he's top comp, or he's top three comps, and one of them was Russell, and top three is what I look at, and they're all pretty close together. If it's Byron Russell, you're very, very happy. So hope is not lost as a Kelly Oubre dynasty owner. John Gross Didier says, do you want Beal or Porter in a dynasty? I think that's a really good question, because no doubt, talent-wise, it's Beal, no doubt. But is the injury concern there? Yeah, absolutely it is. But Porter's not immune to injury issues either. He missed massive chunks in his first season, wasn't right his second year, missed games again this year. I would take Beal. I think his upside is higher, and it's not like Porter is a complete clean slate in terms of injuries. Brad Beal, John, that's the way I'm going. Chaz Clem asked the question, which I've answered already, is Beal worth a max deal, and who would you go after this season other than KD? They've got room to go after pretty much anyone. Beal, max player. I think you got to retain him. I don't think you can let him walk for nothing. I think you have to retain Brad Beal. Who else do they go after? They need a backup big of some description. I wouldn't mind them getting someone like Dwayne Dedman if Orlando decides not to retain him. I think Andrew Nicholson would be an okay fourth or fifth big on this team. A couple of those Orlando bigs I think would fit really well. Dedman would be a really good guy behind them, I think. I'd love it if they could get Kylo Quinn. I think he would be really interesting on the team, but he's still under contract. Beal, I touched on that. Joseph Diffenbach, he asked a question which is very much similar to a question that I got from someone else. Let me have a look. Sam Philp. Sam says, is there any team more stuck in the middle of the pack in the NBA, and what would I do to shake off the malaise? I like the way you phrase that question, Sam. And Joseph says, what moves can this team make to bring more consistency and make them playoff contenders? As I mentioned, they've got so much flexibility. They've only got five guys that are under contract for next season, so they can do a lot of rebuilding that. They don't have draft picks, and that's going to make it hard in terms of future assets, but that'll get that back. But I think you're going to see improvements from Markieff. You should hopefully see improvements from Brad Beal. You should see improvements from Otto Porter. John Wall will make incremental improvements. Oubre will take a step forward. And Gortat might play a couple more minutes. And then you've got room to bring in numerous guys that are around. You could get a guy like even a Gerald Henderson wouldn't be a terrible guy to bring in. It's just, again, you're just looking for some bench contributors. You need a backup point guard on this team, most definitely. I think you need a guy there. DJ Augustine, I think, would be a tremendous guy to bring into this team. I think it would be awesome to have playing for them if you had DJ Augustine. I would love them. I think DJ Augustine's a really tremendous player at the moment. They need a backup big. As I said, Dedman is a center. They need a backup four as well. They've got lots of options. Now, whether they're that attractive or not remains to be seen, but Scotty Brooks has a pretty good reputation amongst players. In the media, he gets bashed quite a bit, but player reputation-wise, Russ and KD spoke extremely highly of him. There was no concern about the players having any concern with Brooks, so that's going to be good in terms of attracting free agents. You've got John Wall there, who we know what he's like. Beal, Porter, they've got some pretty decent young players. So I think that they might not be able to bring in a top-level free agent. So I don't think they're bringing in, say, Nick Batum. I don't think they're bringing in Al Horford. I don't think Kevin Durant's going there. But attacking that layer underneath would be very interesting. I think bringing Harry Barnes in would be great for this team. He could play as a four. I think that Barnes was not ideal today in the playoffs, but I think that he would be a pretty okay fit on this team. You get someone like... if you get Jordy Clarkson, it would be tremendous. You're not going to get him, though, as a restricted guy. Evan Fournier is an option. Kent Bazemore, probably not those guys. They've got lots of options. Again, I don't want to make this a real free agency podcast because I'm not sitting down and looking at the minutiae of deals and space and that sort of stuff, but they've got a lot of flexibility at this point, and that can be really helpful for a team moving forward. And yes, they did make that space available for Kevin Durant. Probably not going to be him, but that means they're going to be able to get out there and get two or three or four real solid bench role players and maybe get an upgrade at a position. Probably not, but a lot of the growth comes from within. It comes from Morris, it comes from Beal, it comes from Porter, it comes from Oubre developing into a rotation player as well. All right, we are done today, guys. The next podcast up is going to be the Chicago Bulls, so you'll see the tweets, you'll see the Facebook posts out about that, and you can leave me any questions about my own Chicago Bulls team. We're going to be doing an NBA draft preview show across the weekend. I'm not sure I want to reveal the name of the guest who's joining me just yet, but he is a pretty big name in the world of college basketball and NBA draft stuff, so it'll be interesting to have him on the show across the weekend. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_beeble. You'll be able to see all the information about all the shows. And of course, to make sure you never miss a show, subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Overcast, on TuneIn, wherever you listen to good podcasts, and evidently this one. And YouTube, you can subscribe there as well. Never miss a show. Leave a thumbs up if you're listening on YouTube or watching on YouTube. If you're listening on iTunes, leave a review, leave a rating. How long does it take you? 30 seconds? Just put two thumbs up as your review. Leave a review. Come on, give it 2 seconds, two thumbs up, 5 stars. Beautiful. Helps the show tremendously, and that would be awesome. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Oops, my music went. try again. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.